because we didn't know that it was even gonna. You know what? We can just listen and talk over music.
Yeah, shut up.
That's what I'm saying. Steve keeps talking. I'm just trying to enjoy the damn music.
Yeah, it's the story of my life. It's the story of this podcast.
This is true.
Steve never shuts the fuck up.
That's just real life.
Brazilian samba. I'm Steve Giordano.
I'm Bob Allen.
This is Cockpit Casual, the podcast.
Number 10.
It's number 10.
Wow.
Double digits.
I'm amazed that we make it every week.
I know, man. And we're a little bit early. It's actually been kind of a quiet week with the company, I guess. I mean, you got some couple of quotes going out, but really not, just LATAM ops again this week.
Yeah. It seems like there's like sort of a lot going on, but nothing ever happens. And I don't know if that has to do with this whole Iran oil price thing, if everybody's just kind of in limbo.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what it is. There's a lot of projects that are kind of coming. We just kind of don't know when, some open-ended dates. A lot of that has to do with, I think, the price of fuel and like,
yeah,
questions as to where things are going and when. But
yeah, are airlines going to be cutting, doing early lease returns or parking airplanes for a while? Is there going to be fuel shortages?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know either. It's a little earlier than we normally record. I'm trying to get everything processed and ready to go out for tomorrow. I'm heading to Pittsburgh tomorrow. My son, Nick, is graduating from the University of Pittsburgh tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Congratulations to Nick. That man, has it already been 4 years?
It's been 4 years. Four Jeez. Years, a Division I swim career behind him now. Swimming in the ACCs, Power Five, like that was impressive. He's graduating with a degree in finance and data analytics, and he has a job in the industry, in our industry.
That is so cool.
Very cool.
Man, you do a good job of raising kids. I'll tell you that.
So far I'm like 1 for 4, but it's still early. Tyler's check ride was postponed due to weather.
Oh man!
But his orals are both done, and so that's going to get done next week. So he's going to finish his instrument commercial next week. He's going to finish his multi before summer. Then he's going to graduate. So really, I'm 2 for 4. Batting 500.
Well, I don't know. They're becoming pilots. I don't know if that is that.
Well, I mean, it's something. It's almost, better than being a bum.
It's almost like them becoming musicians. No, just I say that for what's to come. Okay.
For what's to come. And we'll get there in just a minute. But we do have a very interesting guest, one that has been requested for the last as long as I can remember, even before we were doing the pod, people wanted us to do a Cockpit Casual that featured this guest.
One of the coolest individuals that I know.
He's quite a cool individual, and we share a name and we share 50% of our DNA. The guest this week is Steve Giordano Sr., my father, the man behind the music.
Yeah, a true jazz musician. I mean, through and through, as
purist.
You will see.
He's a purist.
Purest of the purest.
It was a great conversation, actually. We went into, it was actually, there was quite a bit of aviation-related talk in there, which you'll find to be surprised. I was actually surprised by it. And, we try to keep things aviation for the most part, but, we want to dabble in some other stuff that we're interested in as well. And the music is a huge part of Cockpit Casual. And it's a huge part of my life and yours. So, So why not?
Exactly. And it's your dad. I mean, how cool is that?
It's my dad. He's 78 years old. He's still ripping on the guitar. And he talks as much, if not more, than me. So
we know you will all see where Steve gets it from.
Anyway, it's that same kind of scratchy high voice that I have too.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's going to be cool. What's going on in the world that we can talk about that's relevant right now?
Well, I mean, just in my own local world, you know, another cool guy was, you know, that we've had on here before was Scotty Bateman, who was in Phoenix on a layover. So I got to hook up with Scotty. We sat around and talked for...
He seems to bid Philly and Phoenix.
Yeah, I guess he likes us. But he did, and he did hand deliver Jumbo to me, which is sitting right there.
Did you read it yet?
I've started it. No, it's very good. It's an interesting way to like learn about an airplane and the history. And there's some great stories in there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Scott's a classy fellow, man. I really, really like Scott. And you know, he's become a close friend. So it's always good to catch up. We always have good strategy sessions. And yeah. Is that what you guys talked about?
Absolutely. Strategy? I mean, we talked about airplanes and, you know, he's got his hands into all kinds of projects.
He does.
And he's a very entrepreneurial guy. And, you know, he's a lot like us. And, you know, I don't know. We sat there and talked for probably 4 or 5 hours just talking about whatever. We should have recorded it.
Yeah, you should have. Where did you guys go?
A little Mexican place downtown Phoenix.
I wanted to do a side shtick that's related to our guest today. I'm going to talk about something that brings me joy, and I know that also brings you joy. I don't even know how to discuss it. I want to talk about music, because I said this at the end of the interview, so you're going to hear it twice today. But if I had the choice to be deaf or blind, I would pick blind without even batting an eyelash, because seriously, I mean, I couldn't do either. I couldn't do my job and have either affliction, right? So I'm going to be giving up the flying. But I don't think I could give up music. For me,
yeah.
Music, you know, and people that watch Cockpit Casual and have watched it for a long time, they know that the music is front and center. And it's not all my dad's stuff. It's stuff that I curate to try to set the scene and set the moods. And I, you know, the score of a picture is designed to take you on a journey, you know, using other parts of your brain, you know, as opposed to your optic nerve. Like you're getting the visuals, but the music is what takes you on the journey. And I feel such a connection to music. I wanted to talk about what music means to you. And I want to hear what your favorite artists are, what your favorite genres are, and why. So go ahead, Bob. What does music mean to you?
Let's
see. You got an amp behind you.
I know. I've got an amp behind me. There's guitars all over the place out in front of me. More amps. So I started playing guitar from a pretty young age. I mean, I was, you know, probably 8 or 9 years old when I had an acoustic guitar. And I, at 12, you know, I saved up, you know, like $25 and found a electric guitar in a yard sale. And hooked it up to my stereo, and it didn't sound like, you know, Led Zeppelin and these bands that I was hearing on the radio.
It was distorted, I'm sure.
This is a problem. It wasn't. I couldn't get it to distort. I couldn't get that, like, rock sound. It was just clean. It was so clean. And so I started going to music stores and hanging out and asking, like, how do you make your guitar sound like that? And I got introduced to the world of amps, and amps were extremely expensive. I mean, I was like, I'll never be able to afford like one of these things. Then I started saving up my money but hanging around all the music store and those people, I started learning that amps can make different tones. Guitars make different tones, the pickups, the electronics inside of them. And I was always fascinated by electronics, like analog electronics. I used to take stuff apart all the time and try to figure out how it worked. With the electric guitars, I started switching out capacitors to get different sounds. And I really got into like the kind of the technical side of making different tones. That's really what I was into. But along the way, you know, you get into your teenage years you know, as you're talking, you know, music definitely changes, you know, it accentuates your emotions.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
You but associate it can also, times and memories with yes, tracks.
It's
and
like
bands.
A soundtrack. I look back, you know, to the years where there was music that I was connected to, and it's like the soundtrack of my life.
Yeah.
That has carried over like well into this realm of my life, this aircraft fairy world nomadic. And I would say that the most influential band from probably late 90s, when I really started traveling around, was the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Actually, before that, I was through the 80s. I had some really strong memories to some really good friends, some of which are not here anymore, of us just like hanging out or driving around through the desert listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
In the 80s?
No, in the
90s. 90s, yeah.
The 90s.
So I was in high school when Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out. I was in high school.
Yeah. So that album in particular, and that was kind of that grunge area or you know, era.
Yeah.
So there was that 90s music really attached to me, and I have some very strong memories there. But the thing that was cool about the Red Hot Chili Peppers is that the music in the 90s was just like, you know, it was funk, it was testosterone, it was just like, you know, party, just kind of going wild. And that's kind of like what those times were.
Yeah.
Of sorts. It was kind of the wild, wild west in terms of my own career.
Yeah.
And it was just like the whole world is just open to whatever. And I kind of related the music to that. And then as I got older and matured, so did that music. And they were a band that stayed together for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it became a lot more introspective in a lot of ways. And it was just kind of like this soundtrack that was just following me in my own internal moods.
Yeah.
And
you start to pick up like certain lyrics.
Yeah.
Like that maybe have a direct meaning, or maybe they don't have a direct meaning and you interpret them a certain way. Is that? 'Cause the Chili Peppers, I think a lot of their songs are very open to interpretation, especially the newer stuff.
Very much so. I mean, look, you know, half of their songs were about the heroin addiction.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't have that problem.
No.
But there was other things just that, you know, go in life.
Yeah.
That I could relate to. Yeah. Either, you know, loss of friends or people for, you know, going forward in life. To me, it was very positive messages that it told me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it helped me get through some different times. And, it's still like, just, you know, man, I just feel great. Like thinking about certain songs because yeah, that's that soundtrack, that movie in my head plays again, and I go, wow, that was some great times.
So I knew that about you, to the point where when I hear I associate the Red Hot Chili Peppers with you. And like I said, you know, Blood Sugar Sex Magik came out when I was in high school, and I listened to it a lot. In fact, we covered it in some bands that I was in. And you know, it for some reason, whenever I hear any tune, including tunes from that album, from that era, I associate them with you, because I think, you know, back in the iPod, round dial iPod days on planes, we used to plug it into the speakers, and we used to listen to the same music. And so like that was kind of always on.
Yeah, it really was. That was
so like it reminds me of the early days of us playing again.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. And that's what I associate much of that with, are the early days of this business. And yeah, and a lot of it was with you, because we listened to a lot of music in those early days.
We were always stuck places.
Always. We were always stuck in some hotel room or like,
yeah.
Yeah. But there was always a soundtrack on. We always had music playing.
Well, I mean, this was before like streaming on computers, like when we were doing all this stuff. And like, you know, you don't turn on the TV in Lagos, Nigeria, because there's nothing worth watching. I mean, it's the same as, you know, in China or, you know, Vietnam or wherever you happen to be, and nobody watches local TV in a different language. So
yeah,
like music was what I did on the road as well. So in fact, there are certain songs that are that bring back memories of certain trips.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of some right now.
Yeah. You know, so for me, and I'll give my answer, it's not nearly as concise, because it's impossible for me to say this is my favorite. I have favorites within genres. But I don't even know that I could say I have a favorite within genres, because so first of all, I grew up like, so my dad, as cultured and musical as he is, he essentially forbade us from listening to rock and roll, like at a young age. Like, we weren't allowed. Like, I was only allowed to listen to like jazz and classical, and not allowed, but like, he would bust my balls if I was, you know, if he caught me listening. You know, I had like a Walkman on. What are you listening to? Herbie Hancock, you know, but no, it was, you know, something else.
You were the,
they
were
might
the,
be giants or something, you know.
You were the only kid who was banned for musical reasons, and not because it was satanic or something.
Not because I was doing drugs. Yeah. But I think as I got older and into my teen years, I pushed back and rebelled more on that. So, I mean, so my dad, my father, who's on, will be interviewed, is, you know, he divorced when I was very young, and I have a stepfather that was really my dad, Rich. Like, he is my dad that raised me. But still, I had like this loyalty to my dad's musical taste. It's just beat into you, you know, and not physically, but like over the head. And as I got older, I branched out, because it was kind of rebellion for me. But that's when I really found like older rock and roll, you know, the Doors and the Beatles and Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan. And I mean, that stuff, obviously, it's timeless to me. I listen to it. It's on every playlist. But I go the gamut, man. I do jazz standards. I do jazz fusion. I love the 1970s electric jazz, the Jaco Pastorius and Weather Report and Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea. And that era, man, like, also occupies a space.
Yeah.
But I have to be in the right mindset to listen to that stuff, because sometimes I just want to chill, and sometimes I just want to sing along, and you can't sing along to that, you know. You try. And then, you know, of course, you know, I hated classical music as a kid, but now I love it. I'm a huge fan of all genres of music, like country, bluegrass. I've gotten way into bluegrass over the last few years. Rap, you know.
Yeah.
Soul, like R&B. Boys to Men, I loved as a kid. It's hard. It's impossible for me to have favorites. I have favorites for certain things. When I run, I listen to Billy Joel. I don't know why, man.
Really? Billy Joel?
I listen to Billy Joel when I run.
Yeah. I never knew that.
Yep.
I wouldn't have expected it either.
And that's another one that gives me like his entire library just gives me like childhood. And not because it was playing in the house, because it was playing everywhere else. I grew up in the Northeast, you know, Philly, New Jersey,
and Bon
Jovi, Billy Joel.
Then?
What?
He was popular back when you were younger?
Oh, my God. Well, no, yeah. I mean, Billy Joel like was like 73 to present, right? So,
yeah.
Like, essentially my whole life and beyond my life by a few years.
Yeah.
So, oh, I mean, the 80s was the late 70s, 80s, more or less the heyday. And look, his music is genius for other reasons, because it's not complex, but it hits the emotions. It creates the visuals. It's got these like incredible climaxes. I mean, shoot. Captain Jack probably is the best chorus of any song that's ever been written, period. It's the best. It's the best. He drags it out low and slow, and you're almost falling asleep. And then distorted guitar and the piano. Oh, my God, man. You know, so it gives me chills. I
now,
love it.
Now I got to go listen to it. I mean, I've heard it 1,000 times, but I've never, like, delved that deep into it.
Get on the treadmill and try not to run at a 5-minute pace during the chorus.
Oh God, it'll probably be Uptown Girl or something that comes on while I'm trying to run.
I love that one too. I love them all, man. So anyway, that's our side shtick. I mean, it's very appropriate. We're gonna talk music in this interview. I found it very interesting. My dad whipped out his guitar and played a few times.
More than a few times, and some cool stuff.
Yeah, which actually meant I spent a lot of today trying to balance the sound.
Well, I hope you didn't cut much out of that.
I didn't cut anything.
Oh, good.
I cut very little because he did so much talking that it sounded better than our normal, having to edit out our dead space.
I know. Well, he should just be the third guy with us all the time.
He should, but then we'd never get a word in.
I know. We would just be listening to him, asking him questions.
I know.
He's a very interesting guy. I love him to death, man. You are lucky to have a father like that.
Yeah.
And well, have one still
fathers.
Around, you know. Yeah. No, you do. I mean, you're very lucky. You had, you know,
and
two
mothers.
Great people.
Yeah.
Two
I come from
fathers.
A good home, but it's multiple homes. Like, it's non-traditional, you know. I mean, Man, I don't know. We all have our stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. We all survived, like, somehow.
There was lots of love, there was lots of music, and there was lots of inspiration. And there was, in the house that I grew up in, there was never a "you can't do that." It was always like, if you want to do that, do it. And, you know, my mother, my father, my stepfather, my grandparents, they've always been supportive of anything that we've wanted to do. And I'm that way with my kids as well. So,
yeah. Yeah. We're very much alike that. We grew up in completely different types of households.
Yeah.
Although
our moms share a birthday.
That's true.
Same year, too.
Yeah. Same day, same year. They're the exact same day. Which that's pretty bizarre.
It is.
But the common thread there is, like, in growing up, my parents were just like, you can go do anything you want. Go to it. Just do it, though. Quit talking about it and go do it.
Yeah.
It was just like wide open. Like, okay, yeah. No barriers.
And you were the oldest of seven?
Yeah, oldest of seven kids.
So, like, by the time, like, your parents were so busy dealing with the riffraff that, you know, not only could you do whatever you wanted to do, you had to do whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they'd thrown their hands up. By the time there was, like, you know, four or five of us, especially boy, there was only one girl. She was right in the middle. So all those boys, I mean, my parents just, like, they just locked us away in the basement and just said, you know, you guys, good luck. Hope you survive because we're done.
Well, I know a lot of your siblings and you guys all turned out pretty well. So,
yeah,
all right. With that said, here comes Steve Giordano Sr., the man behind the music.
Y'all enjoy it. I know you will.
That's the way to open a pod.
Definitely. I feel much more relaxed now.
We should have had you compose our pod opener. I don't know why we didn't do that. Because we didn't know that it was even gonna, you know what? We could just listen and talk over music.
Yeah, shut up.
That's what I'm saying. Steve keeps talking. I'm just trying to enjoy the damn music.
Yeah, it's the story of my life. It's the story of this podcast.
This is true.
Steve never shuts the fuck up.
That's just real life.
A Brazilian samba. Nice. So we got a Brazilian theme pod today. And, you know, we're selling the West Wind to Brazil, so it is appropriate, actually.
Yeah. I haven't heard how that's going. Hopefully well.
Hopefully well. Let's find out tomorrow.
By the way, if anybody wants to know what Steve's going to look like in 2 years, you're looking at it.
2 years. Yeah. Here's what if anyone look wants like. To know what Steve's going to look like with dark hair.
He's going to look like this.
Somehow I lost my hair color, but...
Hey, mine's darker. Look.
I know.
Bob, your hair's pretty dark.
Yeah, I'm hanging on to it.
Good, man.
It's getting there, but...
I was gray by like 25, so... That's when it started anyway.
You were always age conscious. When you turned 30, you were freaking out.
I wonder where I get that from.
Ageless.
Agreed. Well, this has been a long time coming. People have been asking for this for a long time. And our guest, there are two Steve Giordanos in the room today.
And I'm not one of them.
You're not. You're not.
He doesn't even look Italian.
No. Wait, me?
No, him.
Oh, no.
I'm not.
he's Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
From Kentucky.
Yeah, I'm from Kentucky. That's what my 23andMe DNA test says.
His historical origins are Kentucky. So, listen, this is exciting. What you're looking at here is the man behind the music that accompanies the vast majority of Cockpit Casual scoring. And that's a story in itself that we're going to get to. But this is my dad. This is Steve Giordano, Sr.
Nice.
He goes by Steve Giordano, Sr. Not technically. We have different middle names. But
that's
this
true.
Is, yeah. This is where I get half of my DNA from. So, so my dad is a jazz musician and has always been a musician. I guess not always a jazz musician. I mean, you
always loved jazz.
You started. We'll get into your origin
story. Start it out.
Let's not start there.
You know,
he can still rip too. He can still rip.
But I'm glad I did all that. You know these.
He taught Chuck Berry.
It's all in me, man. It's all part of everything, you know?
It is.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the story. I'm looking forward to this.
So,
what story? My story or his story?
No, not his. I know his story, inside and out.
He can tell the Steve story.
He tells
story.
It to me every time we fly.
We have nothing to talk about. I mean, we have to repeat.
Exactly.
Well, you want me to talk about a little bit about my story?
Yeah, we're going to get into that. Let me start with an odd tie-in that I think people are not going to expect here.
Okay.
I don't know where my origin story, where I became obsessed with aviation. It happened at a young age. I'm not exactly sure the moment or when. I have theories, but one of those theories is that it really, I think, largely came from you because you've always been fascinated with space exploration, space flight, you were an early adapter in the video gaming world.
Yeah.
And Commodore 64, then the Amiga, you know, and flight simulator, like early flight simulator, you were like, we're not talking flight simulator 3 or, I mean, we're talking like vector graphics.
We're talking slideshow.
Slideshow.
Yeah. Here you go. Yeah, man, this is great.
Look how realistic it is. And the airplanes were lines. Like, they were line drawings.
Yeah, they were.
We would sit there and, you know, they're on floppy disks, and you'd have to load, like, 3 to 4 floppy disks to render enough scenery to fly, you know, to fly around in a local Chicago Meigs field.
Well, you're going way, way back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we're going way back. Well, let's not get into that. But, yeah, we're going way back, back in the beginning.
When did you – like, so were you – I guess I never even really knew this. Were you interested in flight and space, like from the time that you were a kid?
Well, I was interested in like any kid, you know, in toys and spaceships and science fiction, and that was part of it. But when I saw Cosmos by Carl Sagan, he really had a beautiful talent of, without being technical, a beautiful talent of making us aware of what's out there, you know, and how interesting it is. And he really got me really thinking about space. And I always thought that in elementary school, they ought to have that kind of topic come up a little bit and have people be aware of this planet and, well, we still have one. and the perspective, you know, of looking at a star and it's another sun out there, I mean, with another solar system. And it's just so interesting to think about.
Yeah.
When a friend of mine, you know him, he passed, Joe Mullen, a great drummer.
Yeah.
Who's on a lot of my recordings, when he knew that he was, when he was going to be dying, you know, I recommended that he watch some of these. Then it wasn't Sagan. It was more like Tyson DeGrasse.
Yeah.
And just to get a better perspective of how we're all connected and how we are. It's a process of, not that you're going to be happy to pass, but it just gives you a broader view of things. And you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think I've always been inspired by that vastness, and it's mind-boggling.
Really. Yeah, there is the picture behind you. Did you put that up for this podcast and that whole spiel there?
Well, I actually have it was $100. I have a planetarium that when my symbiosis project, that you know what that is, it's not jazz, that we just play atmosphere music. Somebody might say it's space music, but it has a lot of elements. You know what it is. I'm preaching to the choir. It's in some of your videos. That we came down the lights and I put these stars on, and it just creates an atmosphere, you know.
Oh, wow.
Atmosphere means a lot.
Well, that, I always wondered that, actually. You know, does atmosphere give you that inspiration for the music that comes out? Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, yeah, it's sort of like a meditative way of looking at it. Like sometimes I might sit at the piano and we just sort of not do anything for a couple of minutes and nobody's waiting for any kind of plan. Like we used to make titles in the early symbiosis, but we decided better not to even do that because we were getting too literal. You know, we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, and then we just start. But I do want to say this before this slips my mind that I got a residency once. I got a grant to do schools, and it was supposed to be, you know, introducing music. But one of the things I wanted to do is I wanted to lower grades to, when they see a film, is to take a notice to the music behind it. So what I created this little skit called The Wrong Music, and I had one kid sit, like, be a secretary, one of the girls, and one of the kids be a monster. You know, they like that, and I'm going, like, instead of being scary, I just, you know, everything wrong, you know, and I did, like, a romantic thing, and I would go, you know, just so they know what the music means. So much to how we feel.
Yeah.
And I often say that, you know, you might have a group of people go to, like when we saw Close Encounters, right? When you saw the aliens at the end, John Williams' score was so beautiful that you wanted to pick him up and kiss him. I mean, if it had been like monster music, it would be ugly.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's funny that you bring that up, music scoring of any type of like film. Is so important, and it's something that you don't really think about, you know, like, remember back in, like, the 90s, movie soundtracks were a big thing, and they would promote the sound, this, you know, Aerosmith is on the soundtrack, and, you know, and then, like, it becomes the main theme song to the picture. I think it's bigger than that, because anything you watch is going to have some sort of score behind it. And yeah. it's kind of – it becomes subconscious. Like the music behind a film is what kind of tells your brain – it leads your brain in a direction, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. – It's wild. Like that's kind of what I've started doing more with Cockpit Casual. That's what I intended mm-hmm. to do from the beginning. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a minute because there were some yes. limits to how I did it. But I mean, just you know, you watch a horror movie. There are sounds that you can hear, if not music, just sounds, right?
Sound effects. And it affects your brain.
Mm-hmm. It it almost tells a story itself without dialogue. And it's just such a critical piece. So when there's a film with a really well done score, it makes the film, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Cockpit Casual in that sense. So the time I was in the studio watching you guys play and record some of the tracks for Cockpit Casual, I saw that you guys had, you know, aviation-esque, you know, videos on, and you were.
That was an experiment.
Oh, was it? So that's it not was. The norm. That's not the norm.
Not normal, but it's all good. I mean, actually, quite frankly, like I like it more like, because when I'm concentrating on music, I'm not actually looking at scenery at the time.
Right.
But I noticed the oldest trick in the book. I took a couple of Symbiosis pieces once, and I put graphics to them, like after the fact, and technically the graphics have nothing to do with the music, but our brains. When you look at a film and then you hear the music, your brain makes it all. It's almost like the composition was made for the graphics, and we didn't even know about the graphics at the time. It's just like an interesting thing.
It really is.
You hook it up. It's not like we're doing rhythm where the bass emphasizes the color. It's not that.
Yeah. So yeah. In those situations, you know, I relating everything to aviation, you know, a lot of how the flight goes has a lot to do with the person that you're with, how you're vibing and all of that. So everything that you're talking about here, does who you're doing that music with, like how big of a thing is that? That's a great
question, Bob. You know, ironically, all through my years of playing, and it was, you know, I love jazz and play jazz, you know, but some of the stuff can't even be called jazz because people don't really know what jazz really is in a sense. But to your question, there are only a handful of players, and they might be great players, but there's only a handful that really have the egoless or selfishless personality to put the music and that can play free improvisation in a so sensitive a way that if I would do something like, not like that, like that. If I would create a texture, somebody would play something that, if they're listening and they get deep, they would play something that would accommodate that. And what that does for me, that gives me something that I wouldn't have thought of if that wouldn't happen. It's not playing by myself. So when you have three people, that's why it's called symbiosis, like it's symbiotic.
Yes.
When you have three people that are in that mentality, that the we don't know how long they're going to be. We don't know how they're going to end. You know, there's definitely transitions where they might modulate to other tonalities. And sometimes I'm so lost. I'm not even a piano player. I'm a guitarist. So when I'm on a piano, I'm just using my ear and playing textures. And I have no – I'm not going to turn on my theory because I know theory. I got to analyze it. But I'm not even turning that brain on. I'm just saying this should be here. You know, yeah. It's an interesting thing that you mentioned because it does matter greatly.
Yeah,
of who the musicians are and the attitude and the vibe about it.
So with that said, do you have to have years of playing with those individuals? Is that where it comes from?
Not necessarily. You have to have ears that, and this is my axiom through my teaching, because there's so much taught in the schools about theory and how to and play this scale over this and do this over that. It's never, even since I was a kid, the music wouldn't exist without the ear. So if you're a great player and you already have developed and you can play what you hear, that's the axiom. Play what you hear, not what you're thinking, not what musical theory is telling you to do. Play what you hear. Somebody's playing a certain sound. Be able to contribute in some way.
Yeah.
You know, just listen to it and be able to contribute. Then you'll find yourself in the world. So it's not about playing with each other. It's about respecting each other as musicians.
Right.
And that we're all in the same boat. Like, we're all in the same boat. When I did these master classes at some of the universities, instead of me going, yes, I'm going to tell you about how to play music and all this stuff, I said, we're all in the same boat. You know, we're all really together. Every struggle that you have, I have. It's always going to be that way with art.
Right.
That's what art is. It's art is imperfection, and that's what makes it perfect.
Yeah.
That's why AI can never replace art. Let's not go there. Yeah. It's a whole can of worms, isn't it? You guys. A whole can of worms.
Well, something else that is interesting to me, that I've always been curious about, when, you know, especially in the improvisational world, in jazz, you have these great musicians, and you're talking about, you know, the ear is so important in playing, you know, the ear and your emotions. But how much of the discipline actually comes in, and the understanding of music theory comes into that as an underlying fundamental to it all?
Another great question. And it's in the background. In other words, if someone doesn't know theory and is just as very talented and can play, that's all great, and they could play great music. And they can play great notes and all that, and you say, fine. But when you know also at the same time what you're doing, you have a labeling system of saying, oh, okay, well, this is interesting, and how come I can use this here? And you start making connections harmonically. You start, like, if I play this chord like this, that's just not one thing. That's a whole lot of things depending on the context. So theory kind of opens you up for experimentation. And what experimentation does, it increases your musical vocabulary, your vocabulary of what's under the hood.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So that's where theory is. Theory turns the lights on to what you're doing. But you should never think about theory as little as possible when you're playing or scales or any of that, because
it becomes second nature, right?
It needs to become second nature. And it's really easy to say, but hard.
Well, it relates to flying in a lot of ways, because, you know, something that we deal with all the time is, like, we bounce around from airplane to airplane, right? And we operate in very different environments all the time. And we also operate with crew members who had different training, who worked for different companies, who have different policies and different procedures and all that stuff. One of the reasons that you have to be quite experienced to excel and be good at the type of flying that we do is because we've taken and committed all the equivalent to music theory, the nuts and bolts, the
right.
You know, how do you, you know, is this the kind of airplane that's so long that we're going to need to do a two-stage rotation off the runway? A lot of that stuff becomes second nature to us. The operating of the jet has to become second nature so that we can focus on the operational difficulties, you know, that we encounter along the way, because it's non-standard environment that we operate in. So in a lot of ways, that's very similar to symbiosis.
How about this?
Right.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt you. Your goal is survival. My goal is something musical.
Right.
Still, we have these goals.
Yeah, you know, it's a means
to
an end.
Like, hey, check me out. Look how I can play. It's not look at my fight. You guys want to survive and learn, and that's the main thing, right? You
know, well, it's not really. I mean, no? honestly, I'm not thinking about I'm not thinking about survival and staying alive. I'm thinking about, like, completing a mission, honestly.
Okay.
I'm not even thinking about the you know, the
what could go wrong?
Staying alive. Well,
because that stuff.
I'm thinking about that.
Well, that's the stuff that becomes second nature. Like we've had, you know, the survival skills beat into us from the time we started flying as teenagers, right? Like how do you react in an engine failure? How do you know? Do you look both ways and clear verbally with the guy before you cross a taxiway or intersection? I don't think about it. My son is about to get his driver's license, my youngest, Ryan.
Okay.
And we're, you know, he's also happens to be working on his private pilot's license. And when I'm teaching him to drive and we're driving back from the train, when he comes home from school, you know, we hit an intersection. I'm like, clear right. And he's like, clear left. And like, we don't even think about it. It's just, it's already ingrained in his mind.
It's second nature already. Exactly.
It's second nature. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So back to... Just real quick, I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to do this because I think people are going to want to see it, and I want to show you this, and this is a good example of scoring and all this stuff. So I'm working on a cockpit casual, and I think I bring it up every week. I'm working on one; it's going to be a great one, and I actually queued it up. The screen is going to look like no joke. The screen is going to look like my Premiere window because I didn't render it. We're going to run right off of the preview screen of Premiere so people can disregard. You can see the nuts and bolts of how this gets put together. But there's a scene that transitions to a Symbiosis track. I'm not going to play the whole thing because it's going to be a surprise when it comes out in June. But I'm going to play a little bit of it. And it's a scene that we recorded this track earlier this year. We went and I, at the time, this production that I'm working on right now wasn't even in my head yet. I didn't even know what the next project was going to be. So instead of bringing videos and ideas to try to set the mood for a track, I wanted to give the band a sense of where I could potentially be using a variety of these tracks. And if you remember, Dad, I said, you know, one of the things that I'm going to be making is a flight across the Pacific. And I played some Pacific Islander music that had it had like some bottles and like interesting like percussion and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And then you guys did a track that utilized that. And then, so we actually purpose built a few of these tracks that I've been using. And one of them, I knew that I had this great footage of the Aurora Borealis as we overflew Northern Canada, which is beautiful. And I kind of had an idea of what I wanted it to sound like. And I don't even know if this track is the one that you guys did for that. It may be, it may not be. I'm not sure. It worked out perfectly. But part of my process is I have to get intimately familiar with all the tracks that I want to use. And so I could recall where I'm going to go back and use it. And I immediately knew when I started editing as part of the video that this was the tune for this. So that's I'm going to play it real quick just so you can kind of see it. And it kind of explains how the scoring elements are so important in how, you know, in what the takeaway is for the viewer. So you're going to see my screen here. I know it's very small. All right. We're transitioning out of a country tune, which you'll have to see. It was autumn, so we expected it. But that didn't make it any less spectacular. The Aurora Borealis, Northern Lights. It isn't really a thing so much, not a gas or a vapor or something tangible. It's a process. We're bearing witness to oxygen and nitrogen atoms in the Earth's upper atmosphere interacting with electrically charged solar particles. Those particles have traveled 93 million miles from the sun in the form of solar wind, moving at over 1 million miles an hour. The journey takes several days and ends as they collide with our atmosphere, producing bands of light that we see dancing across the sky. Green and red, oxygen. Blue and purple, nitrogen. At first glance, the aurora looks stationary, but if you really focus on it, you can see the movement, like water vapor rising in a towering cumulus. But speed it up in time lapse, and wow, just wow, our planet is amazing. All All right, it's all you get.
Oh,
I remember that piece because I listened to, of course, I would listen to the recording.
Yeah.
I remember that, though. I remember that piece a lot.
Well, I use about 4 or 5 minutes of that piece as we're crossing the North Atlantic. So there's more to it, but I want it to be a surprise. But
no, there's a lot more to it.
a lot more to it.
I know the music part, but I enjoyed the variety. That's another thing about the Symbiosis. And you know, like a lot of musicians, I wrote an article about this. Like a lot of musicians... artists, musicians, not making a living necessarily, but just artists, the art of it, is they strive for newness all the time.
Right.
So sometimes to a point of forcing things or just things to be different, you know, just doing crazy stuff just for the sake of originality. And that's not in a great direction. It's better to try to don't run away from who you are. Just trust that you will evolve on your own. And that is, it's a heavy concept when you think about it. I actually wrote about that, especially for jazz players. You know, they don't want to repeat themselves. But if you heard Herbie Hancock on piano and you hear Oscar Peterson or McCoy Tyner or Bill Evans, you would know who they are. Why? Because it's their voice.
Yeah.
They're playing the same instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't run away from who you are. If you run away from who you are, you relinquish all you've worked up to be. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it makes total sense. It makes perfect sense, and I can tell you that it applies to so many things.
So many.
Of course,
you know that all the time. I always say, no, I'm not going to do that. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do, and. Absolutely. And to that same point, Dad, as far as getting that newness doesn't just naturally occur, though, I think. Maybe it does in some cases, but you have to push the envelope, and it doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't always work. You can't be afraid of that or let that hold you back. I mean, even like equating it to new theories or new ideas, if we were a bunch of scientists, you know, I mean – you know, where does newness come from? How do you come up with a new thought, a new idea? But I think you got to be in the right frame of mind for it. You can't force it.
Yeah. So how do you do that? How do you evolve and continue that process?
By being open to listening to things and having it hit me that this is something. And that's the whole desire of playing jazz, not on autopilot. But even if we're playing jazz. Now, the difference between jazz and Symbiosis, the difference is improvisation with Symbiosis is totally free. Jazz improv is improvising over something that's already a structure, harmonic structure and time structure. So even within that world, though, things can get open and loose and you can get into habits. And you shouldn't run away from your habits to the point where you go crazy. Just go with who you are and things will happen. Somebody could do something, especially if you're interactive. Somebody will do something that will spark a new idea or a note that you use in a different way that you never used in that way. And you just hear it. Just, you know what I mean? It's like, I tell my students, you're never going to get to the end, so you might as well enjoy the ride. You know, because they're all like, you know, a lot of them are miserable because they want to get, there's no end.
No, there's no end. The journey is the destination.
Exactly. Very much so.
Yeah.
So jazz, I think that jazz is labeled. I don't necessarily think that there should be a label for jazz because I don't agree that Symbiosis isn't jazz. I mean, yes, of course, you know, Symbiosis tracks, you know, you're not going to go find one of these tracks in the real book. And,
but there are elements of jazz in there. There are elements that we might hit on a groove and we might be improvising as if we're playing a tune.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Whenever I put out a Cockpit Casual, you know, the comments are great. Thousands of comments and a lot of great stuff about the music. And there's also sometimes there's negative stuff about the music,
which
I also appreciate because that means that it's doing its job. The music is supposed to be front and center in my productions. I want it to be. I want it to elicit a reaction. I want it to be positive. I try to make it positive, but it might not be because everybody perceives music differently and mm-hmm. has different tastes and also has different levels of maturity in their ears, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Being able to appreciate complex music takes practice. It's hard. You know, as a child, I didn't appreciate classical music. It was always on.
Me neither.
You know, and then once I started listening to it more, I started, it's like a language. You go from thinking, well, this is boring. It all sounds the same until you really start understanding what you're hearing. And then all of a sudden it becomes intriguing and you want to hear more and you want to push your personal boundaries. It doesn't just apply to jazz. Like I was telling you earlier, when Radiohead releases a new album, the first 10 listens, I don't get it. I'm like, they screwed it up this time. And sure enough, by listen number 12, I'm like, this is the best thing that Tom York's ever done. You know, it takes time to understand the language before.
Well, it's a quick fix world here. It's quick fix.
Yeah.
And that's why that pop will always be pop and it's necessary and people need to instantly have gratification over lyrics. You know, or to get away from whatever it is and jump in. But with the music we're talking about, it has to be cultivated a little bit. You know, you have to have somebody introduce you. I always often have created this scenario. Like if a person walks into a club, a nightclub, and everybody's talking and there's a jazz group up there and everybody's talking and they're not familiar with what's going on, they'll start talking as well. If they go into the same place and everybody is like mesmerized, they're going to think, whoa, there's something going on here. They're going to take that time to sit down and listen. So what's the bottom line? Let's hire actors. Let's hire actors to sit in the front.
Yeah. Or serve peanut butter. Jam up their mouths.
Oh, God. Like we used to do to our dog when we were kids, me and my brother. Oh, my God. Dog will go.
Yep. So, all right. So,
oh, sorry.
No, this is great. I think, you know, I want people to cultivate an understanding and to push outside of the boundaries. I'm an appreciator of all music. People say that, but I legit am. I mean, you go through my playlist on my iPhone and you will find things that are very unexpected. And
that's true.
Yeah. I mean,
all the stuff that I've listened to from you that you share with me is totally unexpected sometimes.
Bob's getting an education.
Yeah.
In music.
Well, and Bob is very musical too. Like maybe not as much as a player, but as an appreciator. Bob does appreciate a wide variety of music. He has I will say for a guy from Kentucky, Bob has a very open mind. Seriously.
All bluegrass. No.
I love bluegrass. Bluegrass is jazz for the jazz of the South, man.
That's why I brought that up, actually.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
Bluegrass, I go through bluegrass phases, and that's also why it's so hard for me to say, to eliminate something and say, I don't like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard. Now, I will say, as a kid, we weren't allowed to like other stuff.
All right, sorry about that. I'm trying to give you guys, open your ears up.
Oh, it worked. It worked.
Now we start the family therapy session.
After dinner, I would take my girls when they were little, and we would just listen to music. You know, why not? I mean, here's the thing, though. Here's another thing that we haven't mentioned is exposure.
Yeah.
If people had better exposure to art in general, all art, I think there would be a better appreciation. I mean, when I played in Europe. When I did a tour with John Blake, the violinist, we just guitar duo, guitar violin. We would play a club, and you can hear a pin drop in there.
Yeah,
it was so quiet here. We wouldn't even bother. I mean, it's just people. It's just a different kind of culture, and everything's about money and what's going to sell. I mean, if you're, what's going to be the fastest trend, whatever. And I'm not saying it's anything's bad music, but when you hear things a lot, you know, you start singing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of that, was there ever a time that you thought maybe I'll just go mainstream, you know, maybe
me,
I'll
you mean?
Yeah, you like to make more money or whatever, or were you
people
all...
told me that people told me that through the years. I would say, are you kidding? Why would I want to be miserable? You know, I mean, it's painful for me to, I mean, the times I played like a couple of weddings just because somebody, doing somebody a favor, it was like I'm looking at the clock and it's 8:45 and then an hour later it's 10:00, you know, it's like.
So with jazz in particular, like when did that start? It was
six.
Was there a transition? Like there was
six all, years old.
It was just always.
I just heard this music.
Was it
we
Coltrane?
Had jazz stations in Philly. Coltrane, definitely. Heard this music and somehow, of course, I didn't know anything about music. I couldn't even play jazz for a long time. But something about it that everything sounded right. It had soul and it sounded right and it was intriguing to me. I didn't have to understand it or feel where one is necessarily or know the forms, you know, of the tune. It just grabbed me, you know, and that's a, I'm so lucky. I feel so blessed in my life to be able to get the support, you know, encouragement. My mother never said, hey, there's no money in that, you know, don't play that. Or luckily I grew up with my mother that let me play and encourage me, you know, and that was important. You know, if I had grown up on my father's side, they were divorced. Who knows what I would have turned out to be? Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, lucky. I'm very, very lucky in my life. And I would never make any change. I had a chance to go with Grover Washington. You know, he died now. He was a wonderful person. And I would play some jazz gigs with him. But, you know, he's doing Mr. Magic and his business lawyer, Lloyd Remick, liked me. And he said, you know, you're talented. He says, look at Grover's gold. In a nutshell, look at these gold records of Grover. All you got to do is, you know, just compromise, you know, do sellable thing. I mean, look, they all did it. Look at Wes. They got to Wes playing Wendy, you know?
Yeah.
Poor Wes. Wes is such a beautiful, Wes Montgomery, I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful, creative musician, starving. They got to him. George Benson. He's a vocalist now.
Right.
One of my favorite guitarists, George Benson. Great guitarist. Became a star. Look at Herbie. Bob Meshi and I went to see Herbie Hancock in Philly. He had a record scratcher in there.
Really?
I mean, Herbie's a genius in music.
Genius.
And he is. I heard him and Chick Corea, two of my favorite composers at the time.
Yeah.
What are they doing? They're playing like Watermelon Man, and they're going like, you know, the power to, you know, I'm just like, I got to get out of here, man. This is depressing.
I will say that era of Herbie, though, brought us actual proof. And I, that.
Oh, what an ingenious piece.
Unbelievable. That thing still blows my mind. I know every note in my head. Like, I can hear it.
Ba-da-bam, ba-da-bam.
Yeah.
The
so good.
Band, that whole sound of that band. Bernie Maupin, was it Bernie Maupin?
Yeah.
Sax solo.
Was that Thrust?
Yeah,
was that album? Thrust, I think.
Thrust, yeah. And Weather Report.
Oh, yeah.
Another genius, Joe Zawinul.
Oh, yeah.
I love Weather Report.
Playing music that was sort of sellable. I mean, one of my favorite pieces is Unknown Soldier.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had that. It's on I Sing the Body Electric. And that piece is so heavy. And Wayne Shorter's in that band. Wayne Shorter does blips and blops, but the concepts are so...
Yeah.
So beautiful. So there, you know, you don't have to play Wendy.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to play, you know, Mr. Magic and all that stuff. Of course, I don't know how many records they sold compared to Wendy.
I mean, Weather Report still, I mean, I still listen to Weather Report. I still listen to Jocko. It's funny because it's dated a little bit, but like it's dated in a good, I mean, it's dated the way Billy Joel and like Johnny Cash are dated. Like it still stands up, you know,
yeah.
It still stands on its own.
Oh, I mean, man. You never know what kind of opportunities are gonna come up in your life. So I have to share this. Steve knows about it.
Oh yeah, this is exactly. So I didn't know if you're gonna talk about this story.
I'm not gonna mention name, but a couple months ago, I got an email saying that this famous rapper wants to use an excerpt of a composition that I did in '79. I recorded it on Muse Records. And it's basically, he's using six notes. And it's real, like, kind of haunting.
Yeah.
I'm going to be famous. I'm not really associated with him.
You're already famous.
Well, yeah.
You're aviation mind, famous.
But the thing is, it's who would ever think that when in 1979 that now I'm going to be on so in my neighborhood, I live in Germantown, I'm going to hear some dude playing that tune. I'm going to say, that's my tune. He's going to say, shut up, what, you idiot. You know, he's never going to believe me.
Have the vinyl. I have that album still over. In fact, is one for Stevie on that one?
No, that wasn't composed yet. I wrote that in Europe.
Okay.
That's a really catchy tune. I love that tune. I make all my students play it. That's the good ones. Because it's not that easy.
It was that era, though. It was that.
That was the era. I was in Europe. I was thinking about my son home, and I just wanted to write a tune. That was one of the tunes I started with, just the melody. I had no idea what the harmonic structure was going to be. And I put the harmonies later, you know. I get inspired like that. You know, I wrote the Volana Anna in Italy, you know, this piece. I was singing at a villa. It was called Volana Anna. And I just wrote this really beautiful piece there, you know. But, you know, I have to confess, past couple of years, I've been through some, you know, some health stuff. I haven't composed. And I just started working with another vocalist. I'm hoping that I'll get some inspiration to start writing in, because I haven't written. I'm jealous of my own music. I listen to some of these pieces I wrote. I'm thinking, man, I'm actually jealous. It's horrible to say that. but I haven't written in so long that I want to get back to writing, you know. But having this opportunity that our worlds collide in a beautiful way. And then also Terry, I told him I'd give him a little plug.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know that Bob knows about this.
But there's a helicopter guy. I can't pronounce his last name, but his name's Terry. He's from the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. And it's helicopter aviation. Uh-oh.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Helicopter aviation. I told him I'd give him a plug, and I can't remember the stupid title of the name.
I'll find it.
He's making me a bowl. He made me a bowl, like a wooden bowl, just so I send him music. And he's not like Stevie's show, because he just shows footage. There's no talking.
Okay.
Like Stevie's like mixing with the culture. You guys are introducing cultures. His thing is just scenery.
Oh, wow.
So he's got some of my music in the scenery. So he was appreciative. So he sent me a wooden bowl, and I said, joking, I said, want to make me a guitar? I think I put it in his head. He might be making me a guitar. No.
Now that would be
I'm
a good
kidding,
deal.
Terry. I'm only kidding, Terry. No pressure.
Terry's website is Nordic Helicopters Aviators.
That's
Nordic Helicopters Aviators. So that is an interesting thing. Like, he reached out to me early on, like when we first started Cockpit Casual, and he's like, I really like your dad's music. Would it be okay if I use some of his tracks? You know, I create YouTube videos, and it's really scenery. It's like helicopter shot scenery of like the fjords and the glaciers and all that. And I'm like, I'll one up you. I'll give you my dad's email. He'll give you the library, man.
I give him stuff. He's wonderful. And he has a daughter that's young. I don't know, 11, 12, 13, something like that. But she likes the music, too.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, man, the culture overseas, I don't know. I'd like to live there, I think. But, you know, it's different. We are who we are, and I live in Philadelphia, in Germantown, you know. But it's okay. We deal with it, you know. We toughen up. You know,
Well, I mean, the jazz scene in Europe is great. Actually, the jazz scene in Southeast Asia has become really good. There was a jazz group at a hotel First of all, I mean, the Philippines has fabulous musicians.
Yeah.
Thailand. I mean, and jazz is pretty big. I was at a hotel with Chris Heber years ago in Bangkok, and there was a band playing jazz standards, and I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, we were like listening, and they were really good. They were locals.
Were they Asian or were they?
Yeah, yeah, they were Asian. They were all Thai.
Wow.
And or Malaysian or something. Yeah. And you know, I was like, man, these guys are really good. So we were eating dinner, and then toward the end of the set, they stopped playing standards and they just played. They just like improvised up on stage. And I was like, man, these guys are legit good. Like, they were legit good.
Do you remember
good.
The instrumentation?
It was like a real standard. So it was like drums, piano, bass. There was a saxophone.
A bass, though, right?
Upright a bass, bass, yeah, an upright yeah, yeah. bass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like your standard, like standard, quartet, yeah. quintet. Yeah. Saxophone was like the brass, you know, woodwind, yeah. brass instrument.
Yeah. Nice. So it's a lifetime of work. I don't even like to use the word. You can understand this now. I don't like to use the word jazz. I mean, you hear my compositions, they're not jazz.
Yeah.
I write waltzes, you know, just beautiful impression. I got an interview one time on WRTI, and it was one of these jazz buffs. And he said, Steve, he says, so who are your influences? He expected me to say, you know, which are true, you know, Pat Martino, all guitar players, Pat, you know, Martino and Wes Montgomery and all these people.
You knew Pat, right?
Oh, yeah, I knew Pat a lot, yeah, yeah. But he, so I said, Debussy, Ravel. I started naming these impressionistic composers, you know, and then I mentioned some of the jazz guys. He was like, he couldn't believe I said that, you know. It was just like, that's the truth. You know, some of the Brazilian people that, you know, when I first heard the Brazilian music, the sambas, I just loved that. That's what I started playing in the beginning, that it's such a beautiful feel. And the bass is only going to be like, it's like halftime. It's like, even though it's going to be written like 1, 2, 3, 4, it's going to be. I try to get my students to tap their foot like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they can learn how to. I said, we're all drummers. You got to get coordination.
Yeah,
you're a drummer?
The rhythm is all of it. I mean, that's what defines it, right?
That's what defines it.
There's a there's an early Cockpit Casual. It might have been the second or third one I did. It was with Ava, and we went to Belo Horizonte, Brazil, and we played golf, and we picked up a freighter up in Kelowna, Canada. We flew it down to Belo Horizonte, and I have a lot of your Brazilian jazz in it. It's on YouTube now. I mean, you can go check it out. It's called Sitting, Waiting, Golfing. And,
okay.
Yeah. And I will warn you, I mean, if you're used to watching like the more recent ones, it's kind of clunky. I mean, like the sound levels are a mess.
Do you care about that when I hear the music?
Yeah. Well, no, the music is great. The music's front and center. It's like you can't hear my voice
under
it.
I'll shut the video off. I don't like it. I just like the music.
No doubt.
You guys are great. You guys been working together how long now?
Oh, my God. 25
long.
Years.
04.
I really enjoy the and I never said this to you, but I really enjoy your rapport with each other. I mean, it really reflects the dedication that you guys have and how you get along with things. And it's just a beautiful thing to see the way you're doing this and the way you're introducing in such a beautiful way, cultures. I mean, of course, you know, your mom's probably worried when you're going overseas and with the climate and stuff like that. But
yeah, she still texts me every 10 minutes when I'm on the road.
I don't worry about it.
Almost 50.
Can I just say, the first time Stevie took me on a plane,
I knew he was
taking flying lessons, right? So there's an airport, a small one in Philly called the Northeast Airport. She goes, Pop, let's go for a ride. It's okay, I'm going, you know, and it's a Cessna, right? Was it a Cessna?
Yeah, 172, I think.
Okay. So I get in this, like, cardboard plane. It was, like, so small. And he takes off, and I hear this voice. Niner, one, you know, I hear this voice. Is that him? Is that him? Yeah, like a different kind of. And we flew over New York.
Yeah, we did the corridor. This was pre-9/11.
Yeah. Way before. And the traffic jams, and I'm thinking, how nice is this? No traffic jams. Here we are. And then coming back, he calmly says, do you remember? I can't land here. There's no, for some reason, You couldn't find, you did, not couldn't find it, but you did. There was a problem landing where you want to land.
No, it was, well, maybe I said that. That wasn't the truth. The reality was, no, first of all, it wasn't South, it wasn't Northeast Philly.
I didn't know it.
We flew out of Princeton. We were flying out of Princeton. So I was working in Princeton. Later, I flew out of Northeast Philly, but this was out of Princeton, New Jersey. And it's a little tiny, I mean, it was even smaller then. It was before they redid the runway. It's a little tiny non-towered airport surrounded by like farmland. It's really hard to find. I couldn't find the airport. I'm like, we came back from New York and I'm like, I see things that I recognize, but I can't find the airport.
Thank you for not telling me.
Oh my God. Was it at nighttime or something?
No, I just couldn't find it.
Daylight.
Yeah. The days before GPS.
it was the days before GPS. And fortunately, I mean, I had an instrument rating. This was actually like I had been flying a little while. I didn't have a commercial yet, but I had an instrument rating. And as we were coming back into Princeton, I couldn't find it. And finally, I just flew up the Solberg VOR and flew the VOR Alpha down and like basically flew an instrument approach in.
I just was happy to touch down, even though I enjoyed it. I just remember feeling okay, that was great, but, you know, but I couldn't overcome the actual – you know, you're so used to – you don't even think about it. It's like
– not then. I mean, I probably had like 300 hours.
You were relaxed.
False confidence.
Were you like that, Bob? Relaxed like that?
No, I wasn't actually – one of the first times that I flew my father, it was in a 172, and he wanted to fly me from Lexington, Kentucky to Chattanooga, Tennessee. He was in the cattle business, and he wanted to go down there and do some kind of deal with a guy down there. My dad and his cousin got in the airplane. I just got my private pilot's license, took off from Lexington, Kentucky. This was the middle of summer. It was really hazy out. It was probably 3 or 4 miles of visibility, which I wasn't really used to. And I started out on this cross country, dialed in a VOR, and got over the mountains kind of like towards Knoxville, Tennessee, and I started losing the signal.
Oh,
and,
no.
And then the compass.
VOR signal?
Yeah, and then the compass started processing and getting off on the wrong heading. Anyway, I'm flying along. I have no idea where I'm at. And my dad says, what city is that in front of us? And I'm like, I think that's Chattanooga. He goes, Chattanooga doesn't have big buildings like that. He goes, that's Nashville.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, there's no way that that's Nashville. I mean, there's no – he goes, what else could it be? He goes – and he pulled out a road map. I had my sectional and all that stuff. He pulled out a road map. And he goes, look straight down there. That's highway whatever. It goes to Nashville. See that town right there? That's what you're looking at right there. He goes, you need to turn. Wow. You need
that
to turn left.
That is a wild story. Oh, my God.
He's
directing you?
Yes. My dad had to show me how to get to Chattanooga, Tennessee. And my dad was not a pilot. Had never been in an airplane,
right,
small airplane
before.
I didn't
think he was. So what about the landing? I mean, where did you land? Did you land there?
I made it to Chattanooga finally, and I actually made it, you know, back home to Lexington, Kentucky that night. He never said anything.
I'm surprised your dad got back in the plane with you. Yeah,
seriously, and his cousin, they never said two words about it. It was just kind of like it got quiet. I turned left. I found Chattanooga, landed, and that was it.
Was your landing good, smooth?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, I could land great. I just couldn't find my way, you know, I couldn't navigate. But I could land.
Your landing was really good, too. That's so funny, man. You know, your landing that you did was really, I thought, professional, really good.
I have the only memory I have, and so this is 20, this is almost 30 years ago, and the only memory I have of that entire flight is like, you know how when you think back in like distant memories, you can kind of remember stills. Yeah. I remember the still of looking out the window, just like fixating, looking at the ground, trying to find the find the airport in the farmland. That's all I remember. I was so embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God.
Start panicking, embarrassment, like, oh my God, this can't be happening. This can't be happening.
So how do you, I mean, forgive my ignorance, but I mean, how do you know that there's not another plane coming your way? I mean,
you didn't.
Well, back then, you don't. Back then, it's visual. Come on. No, it's visual. You look. I mean, you look outside. If when you're in the airport environment,
see. He couldn't see out of his plane.
Not really.
But yeah, I mean, a little, three or four miles ahead of me. That was about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's visual. Visual flight rules mean you need to be outside with your eyeballs looking for traffic. Now, nowadays, you still do, but there's technology now where you have proximity warnings.
But didn't you recently tell me that you have an auto land thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the AI? Jets that we fly, I mean, the jets that we, well, it's not like AI, but it'll track a localizer. It'll go into a flare mode. It'll, you know, it'll retard the power. It'll touch down on the touchdown markers. I mean,
Do you have to be there to guide it? Or, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you have to sit there and kind of watch the controls. But we don't use it regularly. Like, Autoland is specifically for, first of all, it's not a real soft landing. Like, the Autoland kind of, no, it can be, but it kind of drops it in. It's designed only to land in zero visibility. And we, since we're not an airline, we're not even approved to do landings in zero visibility. We test the Autoland systems as part of our flight test profiles.
Oh, my God. That's going to make your mom real nervous.
She's used to it now. I've been doing this for a minute. Yeah, I guess she is. You know?
I know.
So, all right. Well, look.
This was fun.
This was great.
It was fun. It was a great one. Do you want to play us out?
Play you out? What do you want to hear? You want to hear rock? What do you want to hear?
We don't want to hear rock.
Color My World? What is it? Chosen Few? Let's not go there. I'll just play some really beautiful stuff.
All right.
Wow.
The lights went off.
Something's happening.
Oh, that was weird. I try to get my students to scat.
Does the vocals help lead the hands?
It's
or?
Guaranteed to play what you hear. I always talk about play what you hear. So if you, I mean, I'm not a vocalist, but I mean, when you just hear, a note, if you put it in your head, here's one of the things I say. Like, if you're playing a chord like this, you can listen to it. But if you sing a note in that chord, like if you sing, let's just say that, if I go, you're experiencing that chord in a completely emotional different way than if you are, say, well, I hear it. But when you sing a note in there, you know, just the simplest thing like that, you can really get, you know, the schools wanted me, when I taught at some of the schools when I was younger, they wanted me to do the Mel Bay, which is, I mean, if a guy likes guitar, right, he's hearing guitar, I want to play guitar, and this is what he's laying at the music and he's going, I mean, come on, man. How are you supposed to get happy with that? So I would show the kids, I would show them how to play this chord. Let me show you if I could call it up here. Make your fingers like this, and then move them back a string. And I'll say, just make up a song going. And this way, they're hearing the actual guitar make music.
Yeah.
You know, and then once they fall in love with the sound of the guitar making music, then they'll go through all the other rigmarole you have to do to get, you know, to learn things. But
yeah,
to start somebody out with a non-musical, it doesn't sound musical.
Right.
If you did that, maybe. Anyway, I love teaching, and it's a big part of my life now, you know. And I don't gig out as much, you know. I'll do, like, house concerts, but I like my life the way it is now. I'm inspiring. I got a lot of young guys, and I got two of my students are doctors. One of them saved my ass, you know, when I had the cancer.
Wow.
So I got those guys, and they're hard to teach.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're left-brained.
Right.
Yeah, one guy, John, Dr. John, he's so great, and he's talented. And I was like, John, you're not listening. John, hello? He starts me. They're getting in their own heads, you know. It's just really hard to, girls laugh, you know, they hear me teaching him, and it's just funny. After I'm done with him, I'm, like, exhausted. But I have a lot of these young guys that are finished college, you know, and they're still, like, a little lost with making that connection between the feeling and the theory, like you said.
Yeah.
Theory. Like, a lot of people that study theory, believe it or not, never connected to their instrument. It's like an abstract thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
That I can totally see that. How, Dad, are you, like, what if somebody out there wants to maybe, wants to learn some improv from you? Do you have something in place where they could reach out?
Yeah, it's just JZ Guru, JZGURU at Gmail.
Okay.
That's my email, and I'm happy to talk to anyone about music.
Yeah.
At life.
Yeah,
I highly recommend. Highly recommend.
Can we see?
You're gonna get some weirdos emailing you, and maybe some.
I don't care. I'll deal with them.
Hey, we're all weirdos.
But That's my main email. That's my main email. You know, Jazz Guru. I'm a guru to these guys that come over here. You know, and I love teaching. It's really to me. I mean, yeah, there's some money involved, but a lot of the students are so poor. I hardly even charge them. You know, they're scuffling. You know, and. Yeah. It's not about money. It's about sharing the art.
Yeah,
well, it really is.
Well, you're very inspiring. I mean, you've always been very inspirational to me personally. I mean,
thank you.
But you know, just your discipline with the music, and your commitment to it. I relate to in a non-musical way with flying, you know, and I think Steve does too, and I think we relate to that very much. And
the passion you have for it.
It really is. And the whole, you know, I always felt like I was going to sell out if I went and, you know, did the airline thing after I kind of got into where I'm doing.
I can imagine.
And I was like, I'm going to stick with what I'm going to do. Even if I'm poor, stay poor doing it. It's just what this is who I am.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the feeling of, what I can relate to as improvisation in what we do on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
It's something that I have to say, I think a lot of people look like we are undisciplined and disorganized.
Why? Because you have a sense of humor?
But paradoxically, it may look like that on the surface. Underneath it all, we're very, very disciplined and very skilled.
Absolutely.
And I relate so much to you in that area.
You know, I have to say this one thing. It's quick. I know you're running out, but do you remember that guy Bob Ross?
Oh, yeah, the painter.
He was a painter.
Happy Little Trees.
I have no painting. Yeah, I have no painting skill whatsoever. But when I saw him, let's put a tree up. He grabs and he goes like this. I'm thinking, well, this is the analogy that I like to do with music for any age group. Like, you don't have to study theory before you can compose. You know, start fooling around. I teach people to fool around with music and listen. You know, it's like that, the analogy of that guy. I want it to be approachable. Yeah. Like, don't even think about composition. And if you can't read, you can't play. You know, I mean, all that stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's the analogy I like to do. I can make it really approachable. So it's, you make it like that, and it's approachable. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying it's approachable. It should be fun.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be like a discipline.
Right.
You know? And I'm sure you guys love what you do.
Yep, absolutely.
And music, I mean, honestly, I've never been – so the way that I interface with music now, and I play a little bit, but – I you know, I don't have like chops and skills, but I have an ear. I have a pretty good ear, and I think it's because I listen to so much music. But the way that I interface with music is by making these films. Like that's my artistic interface with music. Besides just listening to it, I mean, I listened to a lot of music all the time. All day long, there's music playing in my office. But other than that, like, I can't, there can't, look, if I had to make a choice between being blind or being deaf, I would take being blind because because it's so important to me and the way that my brain processes things, you know, the recall, like hearing a melody that recalls different times in my life or different moods, or puts me in a mood where I can be creative, or it puts me in a mood where I can relax. So it's just so hyper important. And I really, you know, I think that parents should expose their children to good and varied music early so that they can develop that.
Yeah,
for sure.
There's a, you know, there's a person I know, Bob Meese's sister, Kelly Meese. She's a vocalist, and she's a very serious musical therapist, and she believes that music is that what you're talking about, like in the extreme, you know, that certain pieces do this and that. Now, I don't know anything, but I believe it. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to ever doubt it, because music affects your emotions. All my compositions are based on emotions. Every one of them. There's not any left. Even this cute little one for Steve-O, you know? It's not like, I think I'll play something in C minor. I didn't even know if it was C minor. You know, it was just, it's just instinctual, you know? It doesn't matter. Theories after the fact. We've heard that, right?
Yeah.
Theories after the fact. You can theorize it later. But when you're doing it, you don't, I mean, when they teach composition, they imply that, like Bach and Mozart and those people were thinking about theory when they're doing. No, they're like jazz players, like me.
Yeah,
they're
like finding shit,
and then the people answer. So it's a wrong impression to think that I got to study theory in order to compose. No. Compose with your ears. Get some tactical skill if you need that. I mean, it's frustrating if you can't play. I mean, that's why. You know, the way piano is taught is instead of teaching music. If I was going to teach a little kid, you know, the first thing I would say, pitch match. You know, some people can't do that. Yeah. People can't pitch match.
Yeah.
Make the connection in your mind. You hear a note? You should be able to do that. Seems simple. And Terry?
And Terry,
I was gonna say, she's gonna come up again.
A little inside family humor here.
When I was a kid, I was playing stuff, and Terry would go, "That doesn't sound like that." Said, "Shut up, Terry."
It's his mother's sister, my great aunt. She's been gone for a long time, but notoriously pitch deaf.
Tone deaf, completely.
Tone deaf. Oh, my God.
But that, I think that's important to make that connection.
I agree. For sure. This has been fun. We'll do it again. I also, maybe we'll do it from the studio the next time we record. I'm going to be needing more music probably in the fall. So we'll
round up the guys. Yeah, they enjoyed it. Just a lot of fun. And, you know, the only thing, the first time we did it, we had to do it in the morning, and like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Thinking about space music 9 o'clock in the morning is kind of
thinking about anything at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, that doesn't work. That definitely doesn't sound like it works for musicians at all on any level.
It's hard. You know, I'm such a night person. It's hard.
Yeah, I knew that our podcast schedule would work for you because we do it at night.
Yeah. It would. Yeah, I would get up for it. It doesn't matter, but it's just funny. Okay, man. Thank you so much. And I'll be looking forward to it. I know that Terry is going to be excited.
Yeah.
I know he'd be disappointed if I didn't get his ass in there, you know.
It's in there, and I'll put it in the show notes.
He's a great guy, man.
Check it out. Listen to more Steve Giordano jazz. Well, always you can hear it on Cockpit Casual, and you can hear it on Terry's Nordic Helicopter, Nordic Helicopters Aviators.
Yeah, and please put my email down there so that people can reach me. You know,
right. Careful what you wish for.
I'm good. I'm very down with communication.
All right. Your wish is my command. All right, Dad.
Take it easy. All right, I'll see you. Take it easy, Bob.
You too, Steve. Yeah. Great,
take
to,
care
great
of that
to see you.
Take care of that tongue.
I'm trying to. I'm trying. And you take care of yourself as well.
Yeah, we're